Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We are looking at a continuation of below normal temperatures across the vast majority of the country, especially from the Rockies to the East Coast. We may see a little bit of a moderating trend as we move into the holiday season across the far west, and above normal temperatures may return during this time in coastal California.
It's the extended weather forecast, USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
To go along with that very cold weather pattern, we are expecting most of the country to have near or below normal precipitation. The exceptions to that across the deep south and the lower southeast, southern Texas through the southern Atlantic coast, may see some rainfall or even some mixed precipitation there as we move toward the holidays. And then another area expecting wetter than normal conditions. This will be in the form of snow across northern parts of the Rockies and the plains.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Well, there are conversations that happen here all the time, whether it's in the different agencies or on Capitol Hill, and it's people that are talking about your industry and your operation, whether you're aware of it or not.
Kent Backus is with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C.
You need to have eyes and ears here. You need to have someone who is who is speaking on your behalf and is speaking at your direction. And, I think a lot of people make that mistake. We don't decide what issues we're going to engage on and when. We have the tools provided from our members and from the playbook that they give us. That's all grassroots-driven and member policy that is clearly set, and it's our job to go implement it. And even in that, we consult with our members constantly. So I think it's important to remember that you need to have someone here who can be that voice, who can be in the room, because even though we live in a world with a lot of virtual meetings, there's still not a lot of transparency at times. And that's why you need somebody at the table who can speak on your behalf.
And he says when it comes to advocating on your behalf, it doesn't stop at our borders.
Again, most of the time we spend here, it is going to be in Washington. It's going to be dealing with our own agencies. But the opportunity to go abroad and to engage with foreign governments on their soil is a tremendous challenge. If you think that the U.S. government is complicated, the European Union, especially the European Commission, is vastly more complicated. The levels of bureaucracy, just the amount of red tape that they have is astounding. And so we know that there are a lot of conversations that are happening there about cattle production, about sustainable cattle production, about the science behind that, but also animal welfare, animal health, food safety. And the European Union, given the size of their market, they are able to dictate terms of trade because of the influence they have. And so we've decided to engage with them, to go to them directly and have those face-to-face conversations, not as trade negotiations like we've had in previous years when we were trying to build a trade agreement, but to really talk about the issues themselves, to talk about, what it means to have a sustainable production practice, what goes behind climate metrics, and how much science should actually play a role in that. That's a very different approach to what we have, because here in the United States, we believe in, risk-based analysis. We believe in a lot of science-driven policies. In the European Union, science is one factor. There are a lot of other social factors that go into that that can make it very subjective at times. So that's where you see a lot of influence from NGOs, from a lot of special interest groups that do not believe in the science-based production practices we have here. So we can, keep our head in the sand and just pretend like we're going to be able to operate in a world where the EU is dictating these terms, or we can engage with them and try to correct that narrative and actually have, some important debates and discussions about the science. That's what NCBA is going to continue to do. We're headed back over there in just a few weeks. We're going to be meeting with a lot of different people. We're going to be meeting with other stakeholders, because there are a lot of agricultural groups over there that would like to be able to do what we do. And they need a little direction, but they also just need someone to know that they're not alone. And so producers are facing very similar pressures over there that we have been here. We have a pretty good success rate in engaging with our government and correcting the narrative. And so I think we have a lot to offer. I look forward to engaging with them here very soon.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The fed cattle market has been quite strong, holding 155 at the end of last week.
Caitlin McCulloch is director of the Livestock Marketing Information Center. Looking at cash markets,
it's fared quite a bit better than maybe the futures market did during the week, which was pretty wild. It started the week out fairly strong and then had about a $3 dip midweek last week before coming all the way back on Friday. On the feeder cattle side of things, 7-8s were a little bit below last week, you know, down to 178 for steers in Dodge City from down from 182. But those are both higher than the last couple of weeks we saw in the week prior. 5-6s holding fairly steady, not a whole lot of change there. They're still hovering around the 190 mark there in Dodge City. We had a pretty wild week, and somewhat that was what the futures market was reacting to. 12-2 capped off the week just under 250, and then by 12-6 we were back down to 242, and then last Friday we came back about 247. It's a little bit of a strange time of year in terms of the meat markets. You're right ahead of Christmas, which means any sort of wild moves may be attributed to somebody thinking they might be a little short for the holiday weeks, but most of that purchasing is already taking place, and they should be well positioned for whatever features they might offer at the retail level. The other thing I wanted to touch on here was cull cows. We've seen an enormous volume continue to move through the slaughter chain in terms of cull cow volumes. Those prices have weakened quite a bit from where they were earlier this summer. I think it peaked in the mid-90s for breakers and are now last week was all the way down to $68 per hundred weight. That's a little different. The Southern Plains prices have taken a little bit of a bigger slide, as well as Kansas. But if you look at the national cull cow values, those breakers are holding more steady. They're down from maybe where they were earlier in the week. And of course, these are priced as dressed. So if you can do the math in your head, if you're listening, they're down about $20 a hundred on a dress basis. So down from about, you know, the high 160s down to about 144 a hundred. Was the average price 2 weeks ago, I should say.
And for boxed beef.
So the daily cutout has been a little wild. And again, that's probably retailers being caught a little short in their plans. And so that's that spot market price is at about a $7 swing in the last week, but ended the week pretty close to what it began the week at. And I think that'll continue through the end of the year. You're just at a funny time frame. And then after the holidays, things will start to probably sort themselves out. Although I will say we're expecting a lot of volatility next year in both the meat and probably cattle markets as well. Some of it's going to be weather dependent. If we continue to see dryness, that's going to impact those feeder cattle prices. And on the meat market, demand is still a big unknown as we're watching all these recession data points and trying to figure out what the Federal Reserve is going to do with interest rates. It's really a pretty wild economic time. And so that's going to have a lot of influences and make some waves where maybe we weren't always anticipating them to be. And then, of course, the other situation is the feed grain complex, which is going to be pretty reactive to South America at this point in the year and then pretty reactive to U.S. weather and plantings. But we're not really expecting a big break in those feed grain prices until probably pretty close to late summer next year.
And an interesting report.
You have this interesting thing where pork and chick came up in terms of retail price in the last couple of years, and we're going to get another price point this week on what retail prices did last month. And so that'll help tell us what's been going on. Now, pork demand has been very strong and retail prices have been able to maintain. It won't be a good sign if we see retail beef prices slip. That'll mean that they're having a little bit of trouble moving some product. And what we're looking at is trying to maintain those prices, if not move them higher from a beef demand standpoint.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Mexico is a key partner in the USMCA, and it sure looks to me like they are slamming the brakes on renewable energy reform.
Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, earlier this year, questioning U.S. Trade Representative Ambassador Catherine Tai.
In recent years, Mexico made substantial efforts to modernize and green the electricity market. They gave the green light to foreign investment, and they opened their market, particularly to innovative American providers of renewable electricity. But as I just indicated, now it looks like they're in retreat. You know, they're considering laws that concentrate market power and regulatory authority in the hands of the state-owned electric company. That result will mean a bigger focus on fossil fuels, with limited opportunities for clean energy providers. So Mexico's new reforms are a 1-2 punch against environmental progress in America. Not only are they a setback in the fight against the climate crisis, but they are denying American companies, companies in the Pacific Northwest, for example, a fair shake in the Mexican market. And my view is what Mexico is doing now looks to me like it's running opposite from the promises Mexico made in the USMCA. So, Ambassador, as we've talked about, the United States needs to make sure that every chapter of USMCA is fully implemented and pays off for American workers and businesses and a cleaner climate in the Americas. That's what was pursued in USMCA. What are you doing to address Mexico's actions in the energy market that I've described?
Chairman Wyden, thank you for asking this very, very important question. Let me begin by affirming my agreement with you and my commitment that the USMCA must be enforced and implemented across all of its chapters, and we will be an organizing principle of our work. I am also deeply concerned with the legislative and regulatory developments in the Mexican energy industry that we have seen in recent months. My team and I at USTR, along with much of the U.S. government, have expressed these concerns regularly and directly to our counterparts in the Mexican government. Just last week, I convened a roundtable with members of Congress, with members from our environmental organization community, from our energy industry that includes renewable energy companies as well as our more traditional energy companies. And the testimony I heard from them was powerful. They have been unified in expressing concerns with what is happening in Mexico, specifically with respect to the competitiveness of the North American energy market, as well as the competitiveness of Mexico's own energy industry. I have informed Mexico, and I assure you that we at USTR are looking at all available options under the USMCA to address these issues so that the USMCA can work for our stakeholders and protect our environment across all three countries.
Well, we'll want to work very closely with you because it seems to me that, you know, Mexico on one area after another as it relates to greener energy and the challenge of environmental reform is walking back what they pledged in USMCA, and we can't sit by and abide that.
Wyden is the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Congress and the Consolidated Appropriations Act that they passed in March of 2022, it included $1 million in initial funding for USDA to stand up a pilot program for this cattle contract library.
Ben Weinheimer, President, CEO, Texas Cattle Feeders.
It's intended to be a library where all the major packers submit elements of their contracts that they have with the cattle feeders throughout the U.S. And then it's aggregated or put into a dashboard format that allows, you know, cattle producers and packers or anyone, quite honestly, in some publicly available reports that will be available, to kind of look at the various elements of contracts and how contracts are priced. So what's used to determine the base price in these contracts? What are the premiums and discounts? You know, what are some other terms and conditions that may exist between packers and feeders within these contracts? And it's also intended to include written and verbal contracts. So not yet sure what that's going to look like, because I think, as all your listeners know well, there's a tremendous number of cattle that still trade on a handshake and a verbal commitment, and that's almost regardless of which, you know, cattle transaction you're looking at, from the all the way from the cow calf sector on through to the packer. So some work there for USDA to complete in terms of how they'll deal with those verbal contracts or verbal commitments and transition those into your reporting elements within this library.
That may have been where we were going, but that's not where we've ended up.
USDA felt like they weren't going to get all of the information just exactly as they wanted it from the packers who would be required to submit it. So here, just last week, USDA changed their direction, and instead of a voluntary pilot program, they published a final mandatory rule that will require the packers to submit all aspects of all contractual information that may exist. So that's that's definitely a change in the approach and the mechanism and the administrative process that we had hoped USDA was going to continue to go down. That definitely gives us a little bit of pause anytime we see a regulatory agency start out in a kind of a voluntary fashion and then somewhat quickly transition to a mandatory final rule. We're continuing to work through now. What does this do to the original intent of the library? We're studying this final rule and we'll engage with USDA here over the next few weeks and into 2023 to still provide some constructive input and feedback. Again, just to make sure that, if we're going to put all this information out there, that it's meeting the full intention of helping the cattle feeders be more informed about market and marketing arrangements. It's yet to be determined, obviously, in terms of that, as to whether or not that'll be the case, but something that we're going to stay closely tuned into here over the course of the next several weeks and months.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The elements, the environment, feeding cows, this is all a part of it, and this is what our producers do, year in and year out.
H.A. Tarpoff is a Kansas State beef veterinarian.
But, what I would like to throw out for cattle producers in the state, if you're going to be spring calving, is start your preparations now. And I like to kind of go through that checklist of, let's make it simple, starting with, where are you going to calve your cows? Do you have a calving pasture with some facilities nearby that if you have to intervene, you have those, readily and available? When's the last time you checked those facilities? I know many of us, I'm guilty as well, that maybe it was right at the end of the season, you held some things together with a little bit of, baling twine, maybe something broke. And it's been out of sight and out of mind for the last several months. I mean, it's been a full year since we've had to use them. So now is a good time to check your facilities, check your fences, check your waters, making sure the calving environment that you're going to move those animals into is properly ready, repaired if it needs it, and we're ready to put animals in and we're not playing catch up when that first animal starts to go through the calving process.
And when it comes to being prepared, he says there's multiple reasons to be prepared.
It's alleviating stress on the animals, on ourselves, on our health. Yep. All of that is very important to have a successful calving season. Other things to keep in mind to kind of do your pre-calving season check is, what about some other supplies? Common, supplies we use during the calving season, calving chains, okay, straps, maybe a calf puller. Right. So now's the time to go through if your calving chains are old, if they're showing signs of rust or anything like that. Hey, not for use for calving season. Now's time to buy a couple new sets, have them prepared. I personally like to use my calving kit as a small cooler. Okay, so it's got a handle. I can throw it around. Inside there, I have kind of individually wrapped in Ziploc bags, calving chains or straps. So that way I can keep everything clean, because in the heat of the moment, maybe you're reaching into your calving box with a dirty glove. Well, at least it keeps everything else clean. Be prepared with some lubricant. Okay, so yes, there's a little bit of natural lube during the calving process, but having a good general purpose OB lube on hand to be able to lubricate the inside of the birth canal helps things go so much smoother. So our chains, our straps, possibly a calf puller if it needs repaired or replaced, now would be the time, but also your lubricant. And then looking forward to, what about early life issues, right? So I know many producers out there have either dealt with a weak or a calf that just, maybe can't get up and suckle, or maybe we have to supplement colostrum. Colostrum's that first mother's milk. There's no such thing as a miracle drug in veterinary medicine, but thankfully Mother Nature gave us the miracle drug with colostrum. So especially the first couple calves that hit the ground. Maybe they're early, maybe they might be a little bit premature, maybe they need a little help with some colostrum early in life to get them up and going. Having those products on hand, go to your veterinarian, have that discussion, what products they recommend. A lot of our commercial products are freeze-dried. They have some shelf life and some storage where you can have them on hand, ready to go, that if one of those first calves needs help, you're not scrambling in the middle of the night to try to find something from last year. Everything is ready. Everything's up and going. But, you know, I mentioned having that discussion with your veterinarian. It's also a good idea that have that discussion prior to calving season with your veterinarian. Are there any other medications you may want to have on hand if there's an animal that has maybe a retained placenta or a calving injury and need possibly some antibiotics to help get over some of those injuries or anything else that the newborn calf may need? So now is the time to have that discussion, have products on hand, have your calving kit put together. So all of those things I kind of have pre-packed, ready to go. When the first ones start, I don't have to scramble. I don't have to think where anything is. It's already done.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
You've indicated, and Senator Wyden pointed out, that on the environmental and labor front, you are actively pursuing efforts to try to enforce the agreement.
Idaho Senator Mike Crapo, member of the Senate Finance Committee, questioning Ambassador Catherine Tai, U.S. Trade Representative.
But I see no activity to try to enforce the market access parts of the agreement. And let me focus my question specifically on potatoes. I think it's a little over a year ago now, both you and I were in Mexico, and both you and I raised the potato issue. And both you and I got, you know, a response from the Mexican government that they were going to resolve it. The Mexican Supreme Court even is ruling in our favor on this issue. Yet I don't see any enforcement action against Mexico on USMCA with regard to potato access. Could you respond to that?
Mr. Crapo, I know how important potatoes are to you, and you know how much I love potatoes. with respect to USMCA enforcement, again, let me reiterate my commitment to enforcing all aspects. And on market access, I want to also raise the dairy case that we have prosecuted
exactly.
Again. On potatoes in particular, I just spoke to USDA Secretary Vilsack last night about this issue. We have not given up hope, even though we have been taking two steps forward and one step backward for many months now. I just want to let you know how high on our radar this is and how focused we are on trying to secure a win here and to let you know that all options are on the table if we are not able to secure that win.
Senate Finance Committee has jurisdiction over trade. He's concerned about phase one with China.
In your opening statement, you report that China failed to live up to its phase one agreement. It's easier for the public to see China's unfulfilled purchase commitments, but it is much harder for anyone to know where China fell short on these structural commitments. Why doesn't the USTR provide this committee with its assessment on which obligations China failed to comply? And how do you plan to redress China's failure to meet these commitments?
Well, Ranking Member Crapo, you're right. In terms of the purchase commitments, those are the most transparent because everybody has access to the trade data. I would be happy to engage with you beyond the public statements that I have already made with respect to our assessment of China's performance under the Phase 1 agreement. One point I would like to make, however, is that with respect to the commitments that China signed up for, there are a number of different kinds. Obviously, there are the purchase commitments. There are commitments on laws and regulations that China had to pass. And then over time, especially with respect to the intellectual property and forced tech transfer commitments, China's compliance is going to need to be measured by the experience of our own industries who are seeking to do business in China. So it is a dynamic picture, but I am all for having that conversation with you and others and believe that we have been having that conversation as well.
Wasn't just the Republicans hitting hard. Senator Maria Cantwell, Democrat from Washington.
I don't find where we are. And we had a conversation with you, a roundtable discussion with our members, and you said, well, we're trying to reset the table here with China. So we gave you more time. And now we're here and we're hearing this focus that we're not saying that opening market access and getting rid of tariffs is a priority. And that's what the people in my state want to hear. As a very trade-dependent state, they want to know that we are fighting to increase market access. When you think about wheat, when you think about potatoes, when you think about some of these other products, it's more than 70% of the product. It's an export market. And when you look at the impacts of the 301 tariffs and how bad apples have been hurt, we want resolution to these issues. I mean, we are not even getting the exclusion at this point. So it's very hard to look at this equation, and this isn't specific to the Biden administration. I didn't agree with the last administration's approach on this.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Lower world wheat production month over month per USDA's latest global supply and demand estimate.
We reduced our global forecast by 2.1 million tons, and that is driven primarily by a pretty big cut, 3 million ton cut in Argentina.
Continuing recent declines in Argentinian wheat production forecasts due to drought. That according to World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekanowski.
We also made a cut to Canada. It's a 1.2 million ton cut, and that mainly reflects a reduction in durum production.
The global balance sheet reflects increased exports from Australia and Ukraine, among other nations. While few changes were made on the domestic wheat supply and demand estimate,
we reduced our season average wheat price by 10 cents a bushel
to $9.10 a bushel. Reflecting general price weakness in the market. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.